Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. According to the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, 27 million Americans have thyroid disease, and about 13 million of them are undiagnosed. 95% of people that have hypothyroidism may actually have an autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's. Joining us today to discuss this topic and how to reverse thyroid symptoms and regain your health is Dr. Isabella Wentz, the thyroid pharmacist. And it all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is an internationally acclaimed thyroid specialist and licensed pharmacist who has dedicated her career to addressing the root cause of autoimmune thyroid disease after being diagnosed with Hashimoto's in 2009. Welcome to the show, author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Hashimoto's Protocol, a 90-day plan for reversing thyroid symptoms and getting back your life, Dr. Isabella Wentz. Welcome.
Dr. Friedman, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to have you. Now, before we talk about thyroid dysfunction, first, can you share a little bit with the listeners, what does the thyroid gland do for the body?
Of course. So the thyroid gland is this tiny little organ that lives in the base of our neck and actually has a lot of important functions. One of the key functions is to manage our body temperature as well as metabolism. Now, this results in basically helping us extract calories from our food and turning those calories into energy and maintaining our body's temperature, as well as a whole host of different processes throughout our body.
Yeah, I remember reading once the analogy, if the brain is considered the president of the body, the thyroid gland would be the vice president. Is that a fair assessment to the important role a thyroid gland plays?
I think it's a very fair assessment, considering that we have thyroid hormone receptors in every cell of our body. And so the thyroid plays an important role in almost every single process that our body takes on.
Right. And I do know that so many people now suffer from thyroid disease more, pretty much now than ever. And in your book, you share how Hashimoto's is the country's fastest growing autoimmune disease. Why is this condition turning into such an epidemic? Is it environmental factors, poor diet, genetics?
You know, it's a combination of all of the above. And so we know that there is a genetic predisposition to developing Hashimoto's and developing thyroid conditions. However, the genes don't determine our destiny. In fact, there was a study done in Chernobyl after the nuclear fallout. 80% of the children within that region ended up having Hashimoto's markers, whereas in a similar part of Ukraine with assumingly similar genetics, we only saw about 10% of those children with Hashimoto's markers. And so we know that our environment plays a really, really important role in the onset and development of Hashimoto's. And perhaps the different toxins in our environment can be contributing. Nowadays, we are exposed to various types of chemicals that are really not tested and not regulated for human safety. Every few years, we hear about a new toxin being recognized as a potential thyroid disruptor. I know recently BPA has been recognized and modified from the market, as well as triclosan, which is used in our antibacterial soaps. And that's actually a potential thyroid hormone disruptor. So we're constantly bombarded with these toxins that can really cause our body to start recognizing and attacking the thyroid gland as a foreign invader.
Triclosan is also in the hand sanitizers that so many people use as well, correct?
Yes. Triclosan is in the hand sanitizers. We have bisphenol A that's going to be found in plastics, in receipts. We have fluoride in our water supplies. The fluoride was actually used to suppress thyroid function for people with an overactive thyroid many, many years ago before more effective medications were developed. And so generally looking at the average person drinking 8 cups of water a day in a fluoridated community is going to get enough fluoride to suppress his or her thyroid function.
Yeah, and you know, the things you're mentioning, people don't think of. They're eating healthy, they're exercising, and what you just said is, wow, stuff they don't even realize, a receipt. You just mentioned that. I want to make sure people that just grabbing the receipt and putting fingers in your mouth, that can affect you because the chemicals on the receipts, correct?
Absolutely, and it goes deeper. It's, you know, personal care products. It's the foods that we're eating. So we have all of these hormones now that are present in our foods, and we know that our body has a whole hormonal symphony. So this type of hormone is going to affect thyroid hormone, and thyroid hormone is going to affect something else. And so whenever we're taking in meats with hormones in them that are non-organic, we end up with having a whole host of changes within our endocrine system.
Right. Now, you were diagnosed with Hashimoto's in 2009. I always find it fascinating to hear how so many leading experts in their field got there because they got the illness, they couldn't find answers, so they had to create their own pathway back to health. Now, your book is considered the definitive guide to helping people reverse symptoms of thyroid dysfunction. Share with us how you went from doctor pharmacy to focusing on educating people on lifestyle, diet, and nutrition.
Well, yeah, and so I wasn't always interested in the thyroid gland when I was going through pharmacy school. In fact, I just thought there was one medication for thyroid disease, and that's all we really had to do. And it wasn't until I was diagnosed myself in 2009, after almost 9 years of some pretty confusing and sometimes debilitating symptoms, when I actually got the Hashimoto's diagnosis. And at the time I was diagnosed, I was chronically fatigued. I was sleeping 10 to 14 hours a night. I had panic attacks. I had anxiety. I had fatigue throughout the day. I had palpitations. I had carpal tunnel in both arms, irritable bowel syndrome, acid reflux. And just every year, every 6 months, it seemed like I developed new symptoms and my body was slowly breaking itself apart. At the time, I was still in my 20s and, you know, trying to live the healthiest life possible. I was eating whole grains, drinking low-fat milk, exercising, not smoking, not drinking, not doing any of the things that I thought were, you know, bad for my health because I wanted to be a good role model, good healthcare professional. And yet I was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition in my 20s. Part of me was very relieved to get this diagnosis because I finally had a name for what I was going through. And it wasn't just in my head, as, you know, some of the practitioners I saw had suggested in the first few years when I was seeking help. But at the same time, there was nothing out there other than to take thyroid medications that was recommended for my condition. Now, I was happy to take thyroid medications. As a pharmacist, I was all about medications, right?
Right.
But I thought, there's got to be more that I could do. There's got to be more things I can try. Maybe there's a lifestyle component when what caused me to have this condition in the first place. And that's how I really became a Hashimoto's expert / human guinea pig, was because, like you said, because I had to, because there was no answers out there for me. And I wanted to figure out if there was anything I can do to feel better. The medications helped me a little bit. So I went from sleeping, you know, 12 hours to 11 hours, which was a gift, of course.
Right.
But I wanted to feel like a normal human being again.
Wow. You know, when you went through your list of symptoms, I mean, it's such a list: fatigue, depression, you can have constipation, poor skin, headaches, PMS, the list goes on and on. Having said that, shouldn't patients' thyroid be the first and foremost thing on a doctor's list to check? Because what we just mentioned describes a lot of our listeners. Shouldn't they be checked first and foremost?
Absolutely. The challenge here is that the current screening tests for thyroid disease, while we have really accurate and helpful tests, most doctors will not be running them for the average patient. Generally, what doctors will run is the TSH test, the thyroid stimulating hormone. Now, this test is excellent for very advanced cases of hypothyroidism. So if you've had it for 10 to 15 years, that test will be elevated. That test will reveal that you have the condition. But in the first 5, 10, 15 years, sometimes we've seen that test is going to be normal. And so you'll be having all these symptoms. And fortunately, in many cases, the doctors won't be able to find anything because they're not running the right tests. Now, there are two tests that I highly recommend for people, and they are thyroid antibody tests, TPO antibodies and TG antibodies. Now, these are going to reveal that there's an attack on your thyroid gland. And these are going to be elevated within the first year or so when this attack starts. And so, you know, when we have people with a normal TSH, most doctors will not run these advanced tests unless the TSH is negative. And they really should be doing the reverse, because the thyroid antibody tests are going to be elevated first before we see a change in TSH, which may take 5 to 15 years.
Wow.
So I always recommend to make sure that you ask for thyroid antibody tests to figure if you're having any of those symptoms, if you have a family history of thyroid disease, because at that point, that's when it all starts. And at that point, it's easier to reverse, too.
Wow. That's some good advice there. You know, I had a patient last week that was recently told she had Hashimoto's. After 12 years of being misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder and being prescribed 8 different psychotropic medications.
Wow.
So my question is, why is Hashimoto's so often misdiagnosed?
You know, it's very, very frustrating for me to hear that. And I've seen people who were misdiagnosed with fertility issues, women with multiple miscarriages, women hospitalized for bipolar disorder, panic attacks, even psychotic disorders, and, you know, or just being told that they were hypochondriacs or that they need to eat less and exercise more, that they were lazy, and all these really, really unhelpful things, right? And the truth of the matter is, conventional medicine only has one approach to thyroid disease. And it's basically when your thyroid gland has been completely destroyed by the immune system, at that point, we can give you thyroid medications. Before that, they don't really see the value in testing for the antibodies because they say, well, you have these antibodies and your thyroid gland is not destroyed completely. It's just partially destroyed. And so we don't feel comfortable giving you medications yet. Maybe in 10 years when it's fully destroyed, come back, and then we'll give you medications. And it's just sort of this wait-and-watch approach, and they tend to ignore anything else that's going on with the person, where I feel like this is a huge disservice to the patient, because if we had this early diagnosis, we'd be able to do something about it, and we'd be able to get rid of all those symptoms and maybe prevent damage to the thyroid gland and maybe never need to take thyroid meds and, you know, in the long term.
Yeah. It's kind of, I got this vision when you were telling me this, is me calling the fire department saying, I'm seeing smoke coming out of my neighbor's house. And they say, smoke's no big deal. Call us back when you see flames.
That's brilliant. That is so brilliant.
Yeah, I got that visual. Like, that's kind of what you explain in an easier way, though. That's great. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, a fact that I actually learned from reading your book, 95% of people with hypothyroidism may actually have undiagnosed Hashimoto's. Share how the two differ.
So hypothyroidism is what we call a clinical state when we have not enough thyroid hormone present. And that's all that means. Whereas Hashimoto's is when we have an immune response against the thyroid. So the immune system is attacking the thyroid gland in Hashimoto's. Now, Hashimoto's leads to hypothyroidism. When the immune system attacks the thyroid gland long enough, eventually the person will develop so much damage to their thyroid gland that their thyroid gland is not going to be able to produce any more thyroid hormone, and the person will become hypothyroid. So the two really go hand in hand. And for most people that have been told they have a sluggish thyroid, that they're hypothyroid, that their thyroid is being lazy or slow or whatever the cute terms are out there, they have 95% of the time, unless they were born without a thyroid or had some sort of physical damage to the gland, they have an immune process that caused their thyroid to be destroyed.
Wow, that's interesting. Let's talk about the 90-day plan that you offer in your book, Hashimoto's Protocol. Obviously, diet's a key factor. What are a couple things somebody should avoid eating to help improve their health of the thyroid?
So, interestingly, and none of this was out there when I was trying to get myself better, but gluten, dairy, and soy are three very common reactive foods for people with Hashimoto's and thyroid disease. We actually see that 88% of people feel significantly better when they get off of gluten, and even if they don't have celiac disease. So only about 1 to 15% of people with Hashimoto's will have celiac, where about 88% will feel better off of the gluten molecule. What's interesting is the patients that reported improvement actually saw more improvement in terms of energy, in terms of their weight, as well as their mood, compared to even taking thyroid medications.
Really?
So this one food, getting off of this one food, can be more effective for many people than thyroid medications. And I don't say this lightly. I'm a, you know, licensed pharmacist.
Right.
So, and a big advocate of appropriate medication use. But just it's critical to figure out your food-related triggers. And for most people, gluten is a big one.
Yeah, so it's back to that fire analogy next door. If, you know, if there's somebody's in the kitchen with grease and fire, that's the cause of it. And, you know, you're basically now saying, let's go right. What caused that smoke then, you know, even before the fire? And that's interesting because it is a lot of it is diet. It's activities of daily living. I tell that with my patients always. You know, you got to find out. Don't just live with these symptoms and medication to find out what caused it. One thing you said, gluten, you mentioned dairy and soy. Dairy meaning pretty much all cheese, anything that's dairy related?
Absolutely. So dairy, we're looking at milk. We're looking at yogurt, you know, even potentially whey protein. There are two dairy proteins, casein and whey, that may be reactive for people with Hashimoto's. And we see 80% of people feel significantly better when they eliminate dairy from their diet. And we even see with gluten and dairy specifically, when people get off of those two foods, they will no longer show the immune markers of Hashimoto's. Their symptoms, in some cases, completely vanish with just those interventions. And we've actually seen some people being able to wean off of thyroid medications and regenerate thyroid tissue just with those, just with getting off of those two foods.
That's great. What about nutrition? Are there any proactive supplements people should take that helps bring life back to the thyroid gland?
Yes. Selenium is a really, really important nutrient. So studies have shown that selenium deficiency can be a risk factor for a whole host of different thyroid conditions. So anywhere from Hashimoto's to Graves' disease, which is an overactive thyroid, to postpartum thyroid issues. We find that a dose of 200 micrograms of selenium methionine can reduce the attack on the thyroid gland by about half in the course of 3 months. We generally see a lot of symptoms improve as well. So anxiety and hair loss are two of the biggest symptoms that we start seeing improving right away when people start taking selenium. It sort of neutralizes some of that inflammation that's present in the thyroid, and it does it fairly quickly.
That's great. So selenium, also, is there another couple?
Yeah. Vitamin D is really important for balancing the immune system. We generally find that people who have hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's have low levels of vitamin D. We recommend supplementing with somewhere about 5,000 international units per day of D3. You do want to talk to your doctor about that and make sure you have your labs measured, because we go for a target range of about 60 to 80 of the vitamin D, and that's where we see most people are able to improve their depression as well as get into remission and have reduction of that attack on the thyroid gland when they have their vitamin D levels optimized.
Great. So nutrition, diet's important. What about stress? Does that play a role in thyroid dysfunction, somebody's stress level?
Stress plays a really important role in thyroid dysfunction. And there's current stress that we're going through, and then there's also past stress. So for current stress, this might be things like having deadlines, not sleeping enough. This is one of the fastest ways to get your body from being healthy to being sick, is when you don't get enough of that sleep. Having interrupted sleep. So for example, if you have something like sleep apnea, that can actually be, you may be sleeping many, many hours, but you're actually not getting restful sleep. And that has been correlated with thyroid disease. Blood sugar imbalances can stress the body. Any kind of inflammation in the body, infections can stress the body, as well as, you know, the good old psychological stress of fighting with your loved one, or having an awful boss, or sitting in traffic for hours on end. So I do recommend therapies like meditation and yoga and mindfulness, taking hot baths and really taking some time for self-care, doing some deep breathing, cutting out the things that stress you out, I recommend making a list of what things that make you feel good and things that make you feel bad, and cut out the things that make you feel bad as much as possible. Yeah. And the things that make you feel good, add more of those in. We also see past stress. So traumatic stress can also play a role in your thyroid condition today. And some people will say like, oh, I'm so happy. I have a great life. You know, how could stress possibly be contributing to my condition? And when we do some deeper review and deeper analysis of what they went through, many times they might have childhood trauma or some other trauma that's been unresolved. And in that case, we would want to work on resolving that trauma through a therapy like EMDR or another type of therapy.
That makes sense. I'm going to share something that will probably make the millennial listeners drop their fidget spinners in disbelief. But back when my mom was a child, she had tonsillitis, and to remove her tonsils, they blasted her neck with a high dosage of radiation. Of course, that's before they knew the dangers of radiation. But my mom ended up having hypothyroidism and eventually had to have her thyroid removed. I bring this up because I have a question for you. Some experts believe over time, the exposure to electromagnetic frequency radiation like cell phones, computers, or microwave ovens can wreak havoc on the health of the thyroid. What's your opinion on that?
I definitely think there are studies connecting radiation to thyroid disease. And obviously, one of the biggest examples of that would be the Chernobyl incident, where we saw a huge percentage of people who were exposed to Chernobyl ended up having thyroid antibodies and markers of thyroid immune system dysfunction. They ended up having thyroid cancers. And this was very well and clearly documented. Now, people will say, okay, well, that was like a huge disaster, right? So that doesn't matter. But in fact, studies have even found low levels of radiation can be potentially problematic in two specific conditions, and these are going to be thyroid disease and asthma. And so even for going through the airport, I recommend skipping, you know, the brain-zapping X-rays machines and really trying to limit your levels of radiation whenever possible, especially you know, if you find that it makes you weaker. We find some people with thyroid disease actually do have problems with EMFs, and they even may have problems with Wi-Fi. I'm not going to say this is for everybody, but you do want to look at what your individual susceptibilities, what your individual triggers are. And that's what I really teach people, is to figure out what their root causes are, what their triggers are, what are the things that make them feel better and worse.
Yeah, I read that the Bluetooth as well, that radiation, you know, that constant EMF, which they call radiation, but that can have an effect as well. So, like you said, if maybe that's maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but hey, take it out of your ear if you're worried about your thyroid gland and use a speakerphone, you know, keep it a distant, or maybe one of the tubes that they have something called the blue tube, which is actually plugs in and you put it in your ear the old fashioned way without having that electromagnetic frequency right near your thyroid.
Mm-hmm. And then definitely any kind of phone cases you can do to block. And I generally will, I prefer being wired to the internet. So I have a wired connection, and it's actually faster than connecting through Wi-Fi. And I'll talk to people through something like Skype versus having, you know, this phone next to my thyroid gland whenever possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, in your book, you share the connection that our gut has on the thyroid gland. Share with us, what does gut flora have to do with the thyroid gland, kind of different areas? Explain the connection.
There's such a huge connection between the gut and the thyroid. In fact, what's interesting is that the gut and the thyroid gland actually have the same fetal cells. So we start off with them being one. And whatever we do to improve our gut is going to improve our thyroid, and really vice versa. We see, generally, in people with thyroid disease, we see a breakdown of the three things that are happening. So we have the genetic predisposition. We have some sort of a triggering event. So this could be toxins. This could be radiation. This could be, you know, a big disaster like Chernobyl. It could be something smaller. And then the third piece is always going to be intestinal permeability or a leaky gut. And so this is present in every person with active Hashimoto's. If they can control the leaky gut or get rid of their triggers, they can actually go into remission. But some of the reasons why the gut may be leaky include infections. It could be small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and it could be an imbalance of the gut flora, as well as some reactive foods or lack of digestive enzymes.
Wow. You know, so many people are being diagnosed with thyroid cancer. Honestly, I see it every week in my office. Is it because doctors now have the ability to detect it earlier? Is that the key? Maybe it was there, but we detected it because we're so advanced?
You know, it's sort of a controversial topic, because the thyroid diagnoses of thyroid cancer have gone up lately. And now that's caused scientists to sort of take a second look at that. And recently, they've actually redefined some thyroid cancers, quote unquote, as non-cancerous growths inside of the thyroid gland. And unfortunately, a lot of people were getting their thyroid glands removed, and they were getting, unnecessarily, because there was a thought that their thyroid was cancerous, where in fact they just had a growth within their thyroid gland that was never going to be cancerous. So we know that toxins are going to be contributing to this, estrogen dominance, any kinds of triggers that contribute to Hashimoto's can also contribute to thyroid cancer. And whenever, if anybody's ever been diagnosed, I really urge them to explore what type of cancer it is and figure out if it's a slow-growing cancer or if it's one of the fast-growing cancers. Because in many cases, if they're slow-growing, this is something that may not require to have the full thyroid gland removed.
Right. Such great information. Let me tell you, folks, I've read both Dr. Wendt's books, The Root Cause and Hashimoto's Protocol. And I have to say, if you have been diagnosed with a thyroid disorder or having symptoms we talked about today and not diagnosed yet, you need to read both these books. They are the go-to resources for thyroid health and autoimmune disease. And Dr. Wendt, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Friedman. It's been wonderful to connect with you.
It's great. To get your copy of the number one New York Times bestseller, Hashimoto's Protocol, go to thyroidpharmacist.com. Hey, and while you're there, make sure you sign up for Dr. Wendt's free newsletter and check out all the helpful resources available to you. thyroidpharmacist.com. You can stay up to date on all of our latest health and wellness segments at toyourgoodhealthradio.com. Make sure you peruse our newly revamped podcast library, which now includes all of our interviews, including this one with Dr. Wendt. Share her great knowledge with friends and family who are suffering from thyroid issues or autoimmune disease. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.